The date is June 25th, 1993, and we're watching Sleepless in Seattle. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
We're gonna fuck up. Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Baltimore to my Seattle.
Good morning, Baltimore. Every day's like an open door. Hello, everybody. I'm Colin Stewart.
Yeah, that shows the kind of guys that we are, is that you don't, like, drop a Wire reference or anything. No, we go to musical theater. Let's pull out some hairspray. The Wire? What's that? Fuck, I don't know. So this week, we're looking back at June 1993, when the movies and theaters were Dazed and Confused, Last Action Hero, The Firm, subject of episode 90, Jurassic Park, and of course, our movie for today, Sleepless in Seattle, which earned a staggering $227.9 million on a $21 million budget.
Wow. Holy smokes.
Yep.
Somebody made their money back and then some.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Well, there will be spoilers ahead, so if you don't want this movie to be spoiled for you like a dead wife,
oh,
then please hit pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
Oh, that's spoiled pretty badly. But, hey, I mean, as far as spoiler alerts go, though, that's a spoiler from the first 10 seconds of the movie. So you're not getting a whole lot of the movie spoiled by dropping that one. So that's all good. Yeah. Yeah. So here we are, second movie of Meguiary, and once again, I guess Meg Ryan only needs one tagline. That seems to be all she needs. So only one tagline for Sleepless in Seattle. Here we go. What if someone you never met, someone you never saw, someone you never knew was the only someone for you?
All right. Sure.
Someone was like, oh shit, we need tagline for the poster. I'm gonna go down to the local Hallmark store. Someone found a card that said, wait, I'm the someone you've never met.
I don't know, man. It is funny that you say that, because I feel like this I should do a quick Google, but I wonder when Hallmark started making movies, because I feel like this movie is like a Hallmark movie before Hallmark movies. Or it's like the thing that
The seed of a Hallmark movie.
Yeah, like I feel like every Hallmark movie, and you know, seeing that it made like 10 times its budget, this is like what every Hallmark movie aims to be, is Sleepless in Seattle.
Oh, it sure does. Yeah, it sure does. Well, not a very good tagline, so let's go to Colin and get a 60-second synopsis.
You know what? I also struggled to write a 60-second synopsis, and then as I was doing, I wrote one, but as I was doing the reviews, I found a better one. So I'm going to defer to reviewer Jeremy Fremantle.
Do we get a star count too?
Sure, we can.
Might as well.
Two out of 5 stars.
Okay, I just want to know what lens we're putting on this 60-second synopsis. Okay,
cool. It's an interesting take that I wish I would have thought of when I was writing mine. So, here we go. Okay. A woman, Meg Ryan, unhappy in her current relationship, stalks a widowed man, Tom Hanks, and his young child after hearing him on a call-in radio show under the pseudonym Sleepless in Seattle. Although she continues to string along her current partner, she develops an obsession with Sleepless in Seattle, taking photos and following him around until, surprise, a misinterpretation of a hug between Hanks and a female friend leads her to abandon her pursuit. The movie ends with a prearranged encounter on a rooftop, of the Empire State Building on Valentine's Day, just like a scene from the movie An Affair to Remember, with callbacks to the 1939 film Love Affair. Viewers left feeling like they should have watched that classic movie instead of this bland, if somewhat more accessible, remake.
Oh my. Okay. Right on. So, Sleepless in Seattle. I mean, we're doing Meguiary. And we knew there was no way that we could do a month devoted to Meg Ryan without doing one of the Tom Hanks movies. And this is the OG. You know, and so I'm a sucker for a chick flick. I mean, I'm not a Hallmark movie watcher like you are. But I am definitely someone that likes a good girly movie, and this is one of those ones that I always enjoyed because, you know, it is. It's Sleepless in Seattle. That's all there is to it. It's Sleepless in Seattle. I don't have any huge, like, memory associated with this movie, but it's one of those movies that's just always been there and I've always liked, and I like Tom Hanks, and...
Sean didn't contribute to the $227.9 million with the Friday night date.
No, 1993, I was a grade 9 student.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah,
not
I mean,
in your wheelhouse, then.
I might have gotten a date or two out on the town there, but I wasn't going to these movies. In 93, I was going to Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves and stuff like that. So I wasn't quite as developed in the chick flick. So I don't know. But for you, what is your history with Sleepless in Seattle? Because I don't think you have one.
No, I don't have any history. You know, for me, like, Sleepless in Seattle is just it's like a zeitgeist movie. It's one of those ones that I've always heard of. And heard people rave mm-hmm. about as like the quintessential romantic comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never watched it. I mean, I watched When Harry Met Sally. That was kind of my first Meg Ryan movie Nora Ephron movie, I guess.
Yeah.
But I didn't then go to Sleepless in Seattle for whatever reason. I think like, and this might be sacrilegious, but like, not the biggest Tom Hanks guy, you know? Like,
okay.
And so
America's Dad.
Yeah, no, he's just, yeah. Maybe I have father issues or something like that. Yeah. But yeah, so it's just a movie. It's a movie that, it's one of those movies that I've always wanted to watch because it seems like just, like, if you're a person who enjoys movies and you want to watch the quote-unquote classics, then you have to watch Sleepless in Seattle.
Yeah. Now, as someone that is a big fan of the Hallmark Channel and the Hallmark movies, now, first question, because I'm not a big watcher of those ones, is it common in those movies for the characters to get, like, one kiss, if that, in the entire movie?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Like, basically... You know, small town girl, big city guy, or vice versa.
Yeah.
They spend the whole movie, like, orbiting each other, similar to this movie. Okay. With, like, you know, little meet cutes and stuff. But it's usually, like, one kiss
okay.
at the very end. It's, like, the whole movie culminates. And sometimes, like, to be honest, not even a kiss.
Yeah.
And sometimes, to be honest, like, an awkward kiss. Because it's, like, it's not even, like, the big makeout thing that you would expect. Where, like, it's just, like, oh, they have, like, a little peck.
Well, yeah, because this one is zero kiss.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it seems like it was something that was going on at the time where it's like you got to have these romantic movies where the main characters don't get together until the very end, or that's when their kiss is, and, you know, so...
Yeah, I will say that, like, for all that I had heard about this movie, I didn't really know anything about this story.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a little bit flabbergasted by the way it all plays out.
Yeah. Well, here we go. Let's jump into Sleepless in Seattle, directed by Nora Ephron. And they wanted Gary Marshall originally, but Nora Ephron got the job, which I'm surprised that she wasn't up for the director position to begin with, since she is one of the writers on the movie as well. So
I think I can't recall. I feel like I remember reading though that the original director like dropped out due to some like I don't know, either creative issues or something like that. And so then she was like she was already the writer, so then they just tagged her to be the director.
Oh, okay. Well, there we go. Produced by Gary Foster and written by Jeff Arch, David S. Ward, and as I mentioned, Nora Ephron. And so we open this movie any place that a movie about Seattle is going to be, Chicago. Just and just hit you with
What
a
is this,
dead
John
wife right off
Hughes?
the top. What is yeah, exactly. And hit us with a dead wife right off the top. Mommy got sick. It starts off super dramatic and sad. Oh my God.
I don't know why, but the way the movie, even though it opens at a funeral, and I know it's not supposed to be funny, but it's kind of funny because it's just like the first line I'm pretty sure is literally like, Mommy died.
Mommy got sick.
Mommy got sick. She's not coming back. But, and you're just like, what am I watching?
Is this where you're breaking the news to him? Is it like, hey, champ, let's get in the car. I have a surprise for you. And then he gets there. Yeah, so mommy got sick. Yeah, well, but this is our hero for the movie. He needs a new city. But let's talk about this cast because, like you said, sacrilegious that you're not a Tom Hanks fan. Oh my goodness.
I'm sorry.
Some people can be wrong about things. It's all good. Yeah.
Yeah, we all have our own demons. Yes, Tom Hanks plays Sam Baldwin.
Multiple alternate castings on this one.
Let me guess, Bill Murray.
No. It's actually a shorter
Steve
list than usual.
Martin.
No.
Richard Gere.
No.
Matthew Broderick.
No, no.
Oh, damn.
De
All right,
Dennis
well.
Quaid, who was actually married or dating Meg Ryan at the time. Michael Keaton, John Travolta, John Ritter, and Bill Paxton. That one's a little odd to me. That Bill Paxton doesn't seem like romantic leading man material to me.
Also, would have been really confusing to me because I always mix up Bill Paxton and Bill Pullman.
Yeah, well, okay, Bill Paxton, we're talking Chasing Twisters. Bill Pullman, President of the United States in Independence Day. Yeah, but see, and Bill Pull, well, sorry, B Bill Pullman in this movie, duh.
Yeah. I wasn't gonna say it, but
Yeah,
yeah.
well, you know.
All right, well, let's go. Bill Pullman is Walter Jackson.
Yeah, Walter.
Was there any alternate like and I'll say like maybe it is just because to me he is always the president of the United States of America that like I found it really weird to see him in this role. Like to me his role was more like that was like kind of like the Billy Crystal role or the like I don't know the I don't even know. I'm just thinking like nerdy guys like Rob Schneider almost.
Well, with Bill Pullman, he does get to be a romantic lead in While You Were Sleeping with Sandra Bullock.
Okay.
Yeah, that's one where he gets the promotion. He gets to take the lead on that one. But you're right. I mean, this seems like it should be. If you're going to have someone that's that allergic to everything, why isn't he wearing glasses even?
Yeah.
So you're absolutely right. You need someone that's a little bit more Stephen Merchant in that
Yes,
part.
there that's a good one.
Yeah.
All right, we have Meg Ryan as Annie Reed.
Annie Reid, and then Julia Roberts, Kim Basinger, Michelle Pfeiffer, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Jodie Foster, Demi Moore, Natasha Richardson. Those are alternate castings on that.
Ross Malinger plays Jonah Baldwin.
You know who this kid is? We've had him on the show before.
Who?
He was in Kindergarten Cop. He's the penis vagina kid.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And Jason Schwartzman auditioned for that part.
Did he go on to do
Ross
anything
Malinger?
else? Yeah.
He doesn't have a very impressive IMDb, no. Like recent years, it's been an episode of television here and there kind of stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rob Reiner is Jay Matthews. Rosie O'Donnell is Becky. Gabby Hoffman is Jessica. Victor Garber is Greg. Rita Wilson is Susie.
I
Were
love.
Rita and Tom married at this
Yeah.
point?
Yes, they were. They were already married at this point. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and isn't she his sister? Like, that guy's review said friend, you know, a hug with a friend, but she's his sister in this, isn't she? That was the impression I got, at least.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. Maybe their relationship isn't very closely defined, or I missed it.
Barbara Garrick is Victoria. Carrie Lowell is, Maggie, when she comes back as the ghost.
Yeah.
David Hyde Pierce is Dennis Reed.
That's right.
I wish there was more of him in this movie.
Yeah.
I love David Hyde Pierce.
Yeah, and, you know, you gotta love that it's like, 93 was the year that Frasier started. So, shortly after this movie came out, he was back in Seattle playing, another psychiatrist's brother or whatever. Like, this movie about a call-in psychiatrist is the connection, I should say. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, those are the, Dana Ivey is Claire, all the rest, I don't really... this is on Wikipedia anyways. I don't know if there's any more.
No, it's even surprising that someone like Gabby Hoffman is in that. That's kind of a small part for her, but it's like, okay. I guess the other big kid star at the time, other than Macaulay Culkin, was Gabby Hoffman, wasn't it?
I don't even know who she is. I'm just looking at...
She was in like...
Who is she in Uncle Buck?
She was the younger sister. She was... Yeah.
Ah, okay.
And then she was in, like, My Girl or one of those movies. I don't know. She was a big kid star.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, I saw her in a more, like, recent movie. not a child acting movie.
Okay, yeah. So I guess Tom Hanks was recording his lines for Woody at the same time as doing this movie for the first Toy Story.
Oh, yeah.
On his days off, he was off recording Woody lines, yeah.
It is weird to see him so young. Like I'm used to like just current day Tom Hanks. Like, I'm not used to seeing him as like, what is he in this movie? Like, maybe like mid-30s?
Yeah, somewhere around there. Yeah, he's definitely young Tom Hanks. Yeah, it was somewhere after Forrest Gump, he started looking like America's Dad. That was the part. He settled into a different Tom Hanks look at that point.
With that like weird kind of... That's like a very distinctly 90s hairstyle he has to me, where it's like long, but like coiffed. Like, it's not like, it's like, because he has kind of curly hair, I guess. Like, I feel like Billy Crystal has a similar thing going, like, or even, who's the guy from Mad About You? Paul Reiser?
Yeah, Paul Reiser. Yeah,
I feel like he also has a similar thing. Tom Hanks a little longer, but that's like a distinct 90s male haircut to me.
Yeah. I think he's just got very naturally curly hair, because even the stuff that he does these days, you can tell that he's definitely got curly hair. It was definitely, I'd say, curlier back there. Maybe there was a perm happening, but... So then this movie about Seattle, after we get our introduction and the dead wife and the fact that Tom Hanks is going to move, it jumps to 18 months later and goes where a movie about Seattle should go, Baltimore.
Yeah.
Yeah. We go to Baltimore and we get to meet Annie. I forgot that Rosie O'Donnell was in this movie. I was kind of surprised to see her. And
she's like a person I just kind of forget about generally. But then as soon as she appears, I'm like, oh, shit. I forgot about you.
Well, you know, I just had a week of vacation. And for some reason, my fiance and I decided to just binge old seasons of Survivor, and like season 4, the reunion show is hosted by Rosie O'Donnell, and it's like, oh yeah, there she is again, look at that.
what a way to spend a vacation.
Well, we weren't going anywhere tropical, so we decided to watch a bunch of stuff tropical.
It would have been kind of funny if you guys decided to like play your own 2-player version of Survivor, where you just like voted. It was like at the end of the week, somebody's getting voted out of the house. Have little challenges and stuff.
That's right, yeah. Eat some bugs and shit, yeah. But yeah, I also love some of the realism, though, when it comes to the dialogue in this movie. Like, when they're sitting around at Christmas dinner, and when we find out that Walter is allergic to just about everything, right? Someone's always got to chime in with, well, I'm allergic to bees.
Yeah.
Bees! please. Like, I just love how it always becomes, you know, when someone says something like that, you know, like, oh man, you know, I've got cancer. It's like, oh, geez, you know, I had an uncle that died from cancer. That's crazy. You know, it's always got to have that, but it's just, it's dialogue that feels natural. And that's one of the things I love about this movie.
Yeah. It's very similar to, like, I'm going to keep going back to When Harry Met Sally, but that was, like, the one of the things that I loved about this movie. And I don't know if that's just, like, a hallmark of Nora Ephron's writing style, but I like that in any movie or any play. Like, that's always, like, one of the things I look for the most is just, like, very natural, like, snappy dialogue.
Yeah. Because it was something else I also noticed in the scene where Rob Reiner and Tom Hanks go out and he's talking about getting back into dating, and just their conversation is just so natural. And it feels like you're watching guys having a conversation. It doesn't feel like you're watching a movie at times.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I actually, one of the most interesting conversations I thought was in this scene, like after dinner, and they announced the engagement, and Annie's in the attic with her mom and she's trying on her grandma's wedding dress, and just,
yeah,
like,
that escalated quickly,
just,
right?
Like, just the way they, like, I was, the way they started talking about, like, oh, like, you know, does her mom's like, oh, well, like, we knew we were gonna have a lot of fun in the sack and stuff, and like everything worked, yeah, like clockwork, and, you know, it took a couple of years, but then, like, I was just like, wow, that's, that seems like very, I don't know what the word, like progressive dialogue,
yeah,
for 1993.
That's true, yeah. And I definitely don't think I'd be that candid with my parents either. I mean, it's...
Well, even the way she says, like, oh, you know, well, we already, like, she basically tells her, like, they're already fucking or whatever. But,
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it's like clockwork, like you said. You know, she comes back with that. Yeah.
But I just thought, like, I was like, kudos to them for showing a conversation like that, because I was like, even in the 90s, I'm sure those conversations happen, but more often than not, people would be like, oh, I have to be all prim and proper, blah 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 blah, like, and like, you see it even out today.
Nora Ephron's coming in and being like, no, we're gonna have some real talk.
Yeah,
out
like
here.
It's like, it always drives me nuts when people are so, like, I don't know, proper.
So did Sleepless in Seattle pave the way for Sex in the City? Is that
probably, that's what I think so.
Yeah. I also love the very heavy-handed foreshadowing when she rips the dress. And her mom says, oh, well, maybe it's a sign. I thought you didn't believe in signs. It's like, uh-huh. Okay, so, that's foreshadowing right there.
Yeah. The whole Annie-Walter relationship in this movie was, again, though, I will say it's very realistic. These things happen. People don't. And that's one of the things, like, if this movie... A lot of the reviews I read about this movie, when the people who hate it, or even like some of the people who loved it, it's the same. It's like they loved it. They either loved it or they hated it for this, like, idea of magic, and this this idea of, you know, like, true love and you know, the Princess Bride type shit.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like it, but it does make the Walter Annie relationship a little tough, because it's like, Walter is actually, like, a nice guy.
Oh, you really,
like,
feel
you,
for,
like,
Walter.
You never, it's not like he's mean. It's no, not even like he's it's not even like he's, like, an uber doofus or, like, no, or like anything
boring.
Like that. He just seems to be, like, a genuinely, like, good guy, but it's just, like, because it's just literally, like, the magic isn't there.
And she spends so much time, like, backhanded complimenting him, where it's like, oh yeah, no, you're safe, you know, and I like safe. Why do I need to be a risk taker when I've got safe right here? You know, like, it's just like,
I struggle to know if I like, even now, whether or not I like the overall message of this movie or not.
Yeah,
because part of me is like, I just feel like Walter was a fine man.
Yeah, but there is also this little bit of a feeling, too, with the overall, like, love story between Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan, they're not just looking for someone to fill the hole of the wife. At one point, it almost feels like they're literally looking for the replacement wife, like the spirit of the dead wife, because it's all about, you know, you knew from the first time I held her hand is something he says while she's listening on the radio in the car. And what's the first thing he does is they touch hands. That's their first contact, is touching hands, you know, and things like that, where it's like it feels like you're legitimately trying to bring the wife back to life. Find the exact right woman.
I would bet $1,000 that there's a draft of this movie or a deleted scene on the cutting room floor that has the wife appear to Annie in a vision of some sort.
Oh, wow. I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah.
Because it literally seems like it almost seems like, I don't know. I'm sure there's a movie that is like this. Like maybe there's like a Reese Witherspoon movie, I feel like, that might be like this, where like, but I could see a draft of this movie where like Annie's story more heavily involves the wife trying to get her in touch with Sam.
Yeah, isn't that just like Heaven with Reese Witherspoon? I think that might be like what that movie. Yeah. No, and I could see that. I mean, it's almost like, I mean, in a way, it feels like Down to Earth with Chris Rock, where it's just like, was the wife's spirit going to end up going into Annie? I don't know. Like, it just felt a little too much like they were just trying to replace the wife completely.
I struggle to know whether or not the ending is satisfying or not. Mm-hmm. I think when I think of the movie and try to watch it as just like purely entertainment, like I like it. But as soon as I start thinking about it, I'm like, well, I don't know. Like, what did anybody really learn in this movie? I almost feel like it would have been better for Sam to have had to like date and go through and find his new girlfriend or wife.
Yeah, he tries one person
through that method. Like, it just seemed this whole like weird star-crossed, I don't know, for some reason it just doesn't play in 2020.
But I mean, it's all about being in sync with him, right? She says magic at the same time as him, and it's romantic. It's kismet. They're you know, she's his lobster. Don't you know that?
But it also relies a lot on this on like knowing about this other movie that like with the, I don't know. What is it?
The Affair to Remember. Yeah.
Yeah. And I haven't seen it. But then after reading the Wikipedia and whatnot, and I don't know, maybe it just like they're trying to lean too heavily on it. I don't know. There's just something about this movie that rubs me the wrong way a little bit.
There was one reference in this movie though, that did you catch it? Where I'm like, oh, Colin will love that reference.
Oh, I don't know. What are you talking about?
When Annie first goes into work, one of the guys is telling a story about this guy that sells soup, but he thinks that it's about more than just the soup. The story is about more than just the soup. He's an angry guy, and, you know, like, people go there, but he's a dick, right? Like, he's telling that kind of story, and I'm like, is this the birth of the soup Nazi? Holy shit. They're telling a story about the soup Nazi. Yeah, that's as they're sitting around the table. Yeah, he's telling a story about the soup Nazi. He's not calling him the soup Nazi, but
still, I would love it if I found out that like some Seinfeld or like Jerry and Larry David like watched Sleepless in Seattle and they were just like let's take this like little side story and make a character.
Yeah, exactly. No soup for you.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I have to say, I didn't mind the kid.
I actually thought the kid was like one of the best parts of this movie.
Yeah, he's not punchable, which some of the kid actors we've found are very punchable. Yeah, no, he was a pretty good kid, and yeah, I thought he did a great job.
The character is like bizarrely well adjusted for somebody who like recently lost their mother.
But is he? I mean, this is a kid that knows a little too much about getting your back scratched up during sex.
that was weird. Yeah.
Haven't you seen Fatal Attraction? You won't let me watch it. It's just like, wait a minute, Fatal Attraction? Like, it just, yeah, this kid knows way too much about everything.
It is like, are you guys going to have sex? I hope so. Is she going to scratch up your back?
Yeah. How do you know about that? You know, Nathan has cable or whatever.
You don't. Unfortunately, Sam doesn't have the go see your mother, go talk to your mother.
Yeah, exactly. I suppose not. Ooh, too soon. Yeah. There were some really good lines in this. The fact that they're trying to set him up with the woman at the job site and, you know, what? She's single. He needs a wife. You know, what do you call it when life intersects like that? The Bermuda Triangle. That was a good line. That was a pretty good one.
Yeah.
What is with Meg Ryan's like super old kitchen though? Why does she live like she's in A Christmas Story? Why does she have the 40s kitchen going on? The ice box with the handle you have to pull and like she's got.
It was kind of funny because I thought the same thing about her car, but then I just realized it was 1993. But it's like when I see a car like that now, I'm like, ooh.
Ooh, how's that like, still on the road?
Yeah.
Like, is it even worth it to pay for the inspection you have to get done on that for insurance these days? Jeez.
I just feel like maybe people weren't that into interior decor back in the 90s.
Well, see, I was assuming it had to be some sort of
Some sort of
quirk of this quirky character, because, you know, Meg Ryan's always got to be quirky. In City of Angels, she rode the bike all the time, you know, with her eyes closed. Well, yeah.
Yeah. So, idiot. That's a good way to get killed.
I also, you know, I said at the end of our last episode, I'm like, oh, I can't wait to watch Sleepless in Seattle because, you know, I've been there recently. And so I can't wait to see all the Seattle. Seattle at all. I was very disappointed. You get to see the public market at one point, but like, that's it. That's all you get to see of Seattle. That and his houseboat. There's one shot of the Space Needle at one point, right? Like, I thought the climax of this movie happened on the Space Needle.
Yeah, I remember. it is weird that it's... Yeah.
It I like Mandela it, affected my way into thinking that for some reason.
Yeah, this movie goes a lot of places. Mm-hmm. Seattle is like a minor character.
Yeah. Yeah, they kill the wife in Chicago.
Yeah. Yeah. New York at the end of the day gets all the steam.
That's right. They do. Yeah. All the credit for this movie about Seattle goes to New York.
Yeah.
So, okay. At one point, Sam comes home. Jonah is in his room with the Jessica. They're in the chair. Like, he spins around really weird in the chair. They're listening to Beatles music. You know, it says Paul is dead if you play it backwards. Like, this kid is strange. What I want to know is, why is that 8-year-old home alone?
Well, because it's the 90s, I think. That's okay. Like the best answer I could muster. And maybe Sam is like a little more like just not with it than we're led to believe.
Yeah, later on you see a babysitter more often, but in this first scene you do not see a babysitter. So, I mean, are we to assume that maybe because the little girl's there that maybe her mom's hovering around somewhere? I don't know. It just, that kid's got a girl in his room. It's a good thing Sam's suspicious because this kid is a little too worldly. But, you know.
He's going to get his back all scratched up.
Oh my. Yuck. So, it seems very unethical to use your work computer to look people up for personal use.
This is the part of the movie where like Annie, like I'm pretty sure that's a crime actually. I don't think you're a reporter and if you have access to like these databases, like I have access to certain databases at work, like I have to sign a thing. I had to sign a thing and like take an oath when I started work, being like I will only use this for business purposes and. Mm-hmm. The idea that she could just, you know, look up somebody in a criminal, like I think it was like a criminal record database,
Mm-hmm.
and then also like forward it to a police officer, I think, in Seattle to then like go and find this guy.
As while posing as a private detective, yeah.
Yeah, that just seems like all kinds of levels
Oh yeah, there was forgery going on.
illegality.
There was lots of things going on. Very, very unethical. Yeah. Oh, I just thought of another parallel with the mom. They make a big point of Annie being able to peel the apple in one long peel. And that was something that
She's reincarnated.
it's something that Sam was excited that his wife used to be able to do. That's what the
Yeah.
story that he tells his son. So yeah, there's that.
I feel like we completely skipped over the actual phone call to the
Oh no,
psych.
well, yeah, we have jumped around a bit, but yeah, let's talk about that phone call. I mean, dirty move from Jonah. Just, hey Dad, there's someone on the phone for you. Man.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, the therapist asks if his dad is home.
Yeah.
Like I thought, again with the dialogue, I thought that scene worked very, very well and was very like it's a very good just like interplay between Sam and Jonah in that scene that I really liked. I was gonna ask you, have you ever called into a radio station?
I have, yeah. I have called into like talk show, like a sports talk show after a hockey game.
Okay,
Yeah.
nice.
I had a principal, or not a principal. I had a science teacher in junior high who moonlighted on Access Network. As like they had some sort of teacher show, like after hours, like extra learning kind of educational program, and he was one of the teachers that was on this show, and he had me phone into that show
Oh, nice.
for him with the question that he had prepared, so yeah, I was his plant on
Yeah.
that one. So yeah, so I had that once too. Yeah, how about you?
I've not. I always like wanted to. I remember back in the day in my small we used to have this like it was like a radio show called Hurtin' or Flirtin', where people
Yeah.
would like call in and like profess their love to people. And I remember one of my buddies like called in and requested a song for some girl in our class that he had a crush on. And so I listened to that and it was funny. I ended up actually meeting the girl who runs Hurtin' or Flirtin' because she was dating, or I think she still is. He's dating one of the directors and one of my friends from St. Albert Dinner Theater. That was pretty cool. But I've never
Yeah.
actually I love talk radio though. Like I love listening to like in Edmonton, Shay Gannam, especially during the pandemic because things got pretty wild and like yeah, lots
Yeah.
but
Well, you'll be happy to know though that when I did call in on that sports show, I did the old long time listener, first time caller.
there you
So
go.
I made,
Nice.
yeah, long time first time. I made sure I got that in there. Yeah.
Should have
Oh, I have won concert tickets on the radio. That doesn't count though, does it? No, that doesn't count.
I mean,
Because I had to play a game to I won Chantel Kreviazek tickets. Because it was
nice.
like a 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon type game that you had to play. And so you had to connect one person to Chantel Kreviazek.
Yeah.
And somehow I connected the gopher from Caddyshack to Chantel Kreviazek and won tickets for that. For her show. Yeah.
Nice. That's awesome.
Anyway, yeah. So yeah, the radio show, yeah, she I was actually kind of disappointed because of how they set it up at the end where it actually sounds like he will call her back, right? She says, please call back, and he says, I'll do that, but he doesn't even say it sarcastically. I was hoping for at least one more phone call.
Yeah, I thought, and again, not having like kind of like this is one of those movies where I was like forecasting what I thought it was gonna be as I watched it. And I thought it was gonna and let's be fair, I've never seen You've Got Mail, but like my whole understanding of it is like it's like people communicate through like email letters and stuff, like whatever. And I thought there was gonna be, it was gonna be a similar thing where it was more like he was gonna call back periodically throughout the movie, and that was gonna be because
Yeah.
this is the other thing, like Annie's whole thing from this one phone call.
Her fantasy is all from one phone call. Oh no, well, he is back on the radio a second time. That's right, because she's hiding in the closet. He does call back a second time.
Oh, does it? I thought, I know she heard him again. Oh
She
yeah,
heard
she did. Like when the
the
repeat
replay.
episode or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the best of or whatever,
But anyways,
but still,
I thought
yeah.
there was gonna be more something like that where it was gonna be like a build up, not just like I heard the dulcet tones of Tom Hanks one time and now I can never get it out of my brain and I'm
That's
in
right.
love forever. Like calling me like a siren song to Seattle.
Exactly. That's what it should have been, yeah. Yeah, she should have started tape recording it so that she could listen to it on the plane on her Walkman.
Yeah. They should have had they should have had the scene where she's like listening to it in her bedroom, and then Walter walks in and she's like, "No, get out of here."
Oh
With
boy.
a little bit of, I just
What
envision
was that buzzing
some mood
sound?
lighting
What was
and
that buzzing sound?
yeah.
Your candles going?
Close
Yeah.
the door. There's some mood, yeah, mood lighting, some candles, some low light.
It's magic. That's exactly what it is. Oh boy. Sponsorship corner. I had no segue. I was looking at my sponsor list. I'm just doing sponsorship corner. So, always on the lookout for product placements and movies. This week, Sleepless in Seattle is brought to you by Pontiac and Chrysler Vehicles, Coke and Sprite, the Seattle Mariners and Chicago Cubs, Starter Athletics, Parker Brothers, U-Haul, Con Edison, Lloyd's of London, Tiffany and Co., and the Plaza Hotel, plus the possibly fictional The Colonial Club and the Capital Diner. And I guess Ipecac. It's brought to you by Ipecac because that's where he's responsible as a father. I like that touch, is when he goes out for the night, it's like there's Ipecac in case you swallow poison. So, and this has been Sponsorship Corner. Oh boy, get out of here. Yeah.
You know, Walt, you know,
Oh.
Walter would be like, oh, sorry. I'm allergic to candles.
I'm allergic to candles. Are those beeswax candles? Oh no, wait, he's not the one allergic to bees. Right, I've got it in here that Jonah is the one that calls the radio doctor again because his dad's outside kissing.
All right,
That's what it
yeah.
is. Yeah. She's a hoe. My father's been captured by a hoe. Boy, they did a good job of making that woman annoying. Like, for all the sympathy that Walter can get, it's like, oh no, after one night with that woman, it's like, no. No. I guess the scene though where he's packing to go away and he's like, no, like I'm gonna get laid. This is what it is. I guess that scene was originally written that he was going to cave to Jonah. And be like, oh, okay, fine, you're right. You're right. This woman's bad for me. And it was Tom Hanks that talked him out of it. He's like, no, as a guy, I'm sorry, it doesn't matter how much you love your kid. If you have a chance to get laid, you're going to get laid. So they changed it. So if you have a squeaky clean image of Tom Hanks, keep in mind that he came up with that idea. I also enjoy that we got yet another Dirty Dozen reference. Like, for the third time in like a couple of in a couple of months here, where they're sitting around the table talking about, you know, crying at the end of movies, right after Rita Wilson gives that one like really dramatic like tear-filled monologue of hers, and then they start mocking her with the Dirty Dozen. I cried at the end of Dirty Dozen.
Maybe we should
Yeah,
watch Dirty Dozen. I've never
should
seen it.
just.
All, everything will become clear.
That's right. That's right. Oh, and there's so many corded phones in this movie.
Kind of missed in my watch, like, how the New York thing, how all that unfolded. That was Jonah's doing, right? Like, he...
Yeah.
Or does she send him a letter first? She
sent him a letter for... Yeah, actually, it was her letter that she had typed up saying that we'll do that. And then he sent back the one that he's like, you sound really neato. I think we should meet at the top of the Empire State Building. And that's when she thinks that, like, he's just a moron.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because instead of signing it from the son of Sleepless in Seattle, he thinks that he's going to sound like his dad in that letter.
Basically.
Yeah, no, the New York thing was all his doing, but the Seattle thing was all her doing, flying out to Seattle. That's pretty extreme. It is interesting in this movie, and maybe it's because I don't watch enough of these movies, even though I enjoy most of them, is the fact that the two leads of this movie don't share any scenes together. Like, they cross paths in the airport, they see each other on the road, and then they've got the scene at the end. That's the only scenes that these people actually have any interaction. I mean, there is the one where she's lurking from the alleyway and watching them as she's followed them in their boat.
Yeah, like, I'd be curious to know how many actual words they say to each other. Like, yeah. Is it three? Like, yeah. It's hello?
Yeah.
And then, like...
You're Annie? He says, you're Annie. Yeah. And he's like, let's get out of here. I think that's, like, almost all that they say to each other. Because she speaks mostly to Jonah and the bear.
Yeah. I thought that road scene was absolutely bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
I just, like...
Well, like, doesn't it just seem like that...
What was her end game?
Yeah.
Like, to just run up there and be like, I'm in love with you.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Well, see, and again, this is another one of those cases where romantic movies from my early life ruined my perception of how to actually interact with women properly.
Yeah. Yeah. This movie really, like, literally makes it seem like if a woman likes you, she'll stalk you.
Yeah.
She'll just be there in the distance whenever you look around.
Yeah.
Which is normally the territory of men, I will say, like, in movies, but...
So, does that make it refreshing, maybe?
That's another progressive strike for this movie.
I mean, there is the brief moment in the airport where he does lock eyes with Annie, or he doesn't even lock eyes with her. She doesn't see him in that moment. But he tries to chase her down, and then he loses her. So, I mean, I don't know. He's loving at first sight with her, no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This movie was needed kind of like a weird... Well, I guess they kind of do it. It's the magic thing is the... Is the, I guess, the through line. That's what we're all looking for.
Yeah. I mean, it's also weird to look at a movie in 1993 and just realize how easy it was to pull scams on airlines.
Yeah.
I mean, not only did he walk the one woman to the gate, you know, and see Meg Ryan get off her plane, but meanwhile, the kid manages to scam a ticket. I do like the one lie, though, that they tell. No, we'll just tell them that you're small for your age and not to bring it up because it'll hurt your feelings. But yeah, it's like, it's so easy to get on a flight in 1993 that this kid gets to New York. He's lucky that his dad had enough space on the credit card for two tickets to New York.
I mean, I guess, like, it is true. We saw similar in Home Alone 2 where, you know, I mean... It's not that hard to get to New York if you're a small child.
That's true. That's true. Okay, so one character that I didn't understand was Jessica's dad. Now, it was a very brief scene, but when they're trying to get the information out of Jessica about the fact that Jonah has gone to New York, Jessica's dad comes up and goes, "Jessica, this is your father." I don't understand why the line was written like that. You're standing right in front of her. She knows that it's dad. It felt strange. Yeah, Jessica, this is your father. You're going to tell us where. And I don't know. That guy had one line and he gave it all his heart.
Yeah.
That's all I know. It's like, well, this line doesn't make sense, but I'm going to say it and I'm going to mean it.
They're still of the age where it's like your daughter is your property.
Yeah, I guess so.
You will answer me.
I think that little girl would be annoying with all her little abbreviations, though.
What?
She has all her little abbreviations where NW or,
oh, right,
you know,
yeah.
Like, yeah, like, well, she says NY as an answer, and he's like, well, see, she's not going to tell us. She said no way. It's like, no, she said NY, New York. I guess the father just had to say, Jessica, this is your father, because he just wasn't smart enough otherwise. He had to remind himself who he was beforehand, because he's not smart enough to know that NY doesn't stand for no way.
Yeah.
Well, I guess pretty much the only thing to talk about now is the big climax. Jonah gets to New York. He goes to the Empire State Building. I was convinced that the old man in the elevator, I was convinced that that had to be someone making a cameo. I'm like, there's no way that you hire an actor that old. I'm like, was Cary Grant in the movie? I don't know when he died, right? Like, was that Cary Grant? But no, it was, nope, he's nobody. This is his only movie. Maybe he was the actual elevator operator for the Empire State Building or something.
Oh, yeah, you would have thought, like, with the way they referenced that one movie, you would have thought they could have put a cameo in.
Well, the fact that, like, going back to the road scene where she sees him at the beach and almost gets hit by a truck, I thought that was foreshadowing. I thought they were going to do the same ending.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I already forgot where the ending took place. I'm like, wait, shit, does she get hit by a car? Am I remembering this wrong? Like, she makes it, right? No, did she get hit by a car? So I did have, like, a moment of doubt there where I'm like, are they going to do the movie exactly the same?
I honestly thought it was a little bit of a punk move the way, like, I don't know. At that point, it became a little bit too formulaic to me. I think would have liked if they did miss, and then, like, I don't know, it had to, but I mean, at that point, the movie could only go on for so much longer.
Well, yeah,
and I guess we do want them to be together, so it's probably the better way to do it. But,
well, and they do at least give you the psych out of the miss.
Yeah, I guess in my mind it was just like, it was one psych out too many. Like, it was one, like, I would have loved if she was just there when the elevator door opened.
Yeah.
And you had, like, a big moment. I thought it kind of, like, undercut, to me anyways, the overall momentum of the whole scene.
Yeah, well, and also, I mean, again, the whole pre-9/11 world, the fact that she finds Jonah's bag at the top of the Empire State Building and doesn't immediately start screaming for people about a suspicious package, you know, it's just another thing that screams, you know, well, 10 years later, that's not going to be the case.
Yeah,
a bag
point.
Left behind, holy fuck, yeah. You're just going to dig through that? Haven't you ever watched a movie, Meg Ryan? God!
Yeah.
But yeah, she starts digging through the bag just in time for Sam and Jonah to come back up in the elevator. So thank goodness. The psych out. I mean, it would have been nice if she had gotten into her elevator and left, and then they came up looking for their bag. Oh, they never cross paths. Like you said. I don't know. That Empire State Building, though, was a set.
Yeah.
And the funny thing about it is it was built in Seattle. They had an old naval air station that they built a lot of the sets on. And yeah, the top of the Empire State Building was one of them. That's just an extra kick in the nuts to the citizens of Seattle, don't you think? Could have filmed it at the top of the Space Needle. But no, Sean only gets to see the public market. So excited. I was like, I've been there. Come on.
And now that you mention it, it is kind of, like, ridiculous that they didn't use the Space Needle for that scene and instead went to the Empire State Building. Like, it just seems like, why couldn't it have just been meet me at the top of the Space Needle? Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, you heard my name. Sleepless in Seattle. It's nowhere near New York. Like, when he pulls down the map, 1, 2, 3, 4, like, there's like 20 states in between there.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. That is Sleepless in Seattle. Now Colin on IMDb had scored 6.8 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 72. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 75% on the tomato meter and also an audience rating of 75%. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like, getting hit by a bus? I don't know. Hit us with some reviews.
All right.
She almost got hit by a bus. No, a U-Haul truck. She almost got hit by a U-Haul truck, I should say.
Man, I have so many reviews. Where should I start? All right, we'll start with a 5 out of 5 from America First.
Okay.
Not too many movies can be viewed as perfect, but Sleepless in Seattle is in every way. The storyline incorporated with snippets of An Affair to Remember is a perfect blending of both movies. Comic relief is provided from an otherwise sad story, i.e. Rob Reiner discussing dating in the 90s and Rita Wilson's version of An Affair to Remember. Who could resist little Jonah dealing with his father's broken heart with the help of his friend Jessica? Adding to a wonderful script and great acting, the musical score also is perfect in every way. My favorite is I'm Back in the Saddle Again, playing as Tom Hanks attempts to make his first date. For those who find the plot unrealistic, the movie was not intended to be. Neither was Miracle on 34th Street, another perfect movie. With a little touch of love and hope. That just triggered my Hootie and the Blowfish. With a little love and some tenderness. Both movies provide... Both movies provide, I'm pretty sure we've done this before.
Yeah, we have.
Both movies provide some relief from an otherwise tough and many times cruel world we live in and think of as reality.
No, I mean, perfect is, I'd be interested to see how hyperbolic this person is in everyday life, because, like, perfect is a pretty heavy word to throw on this. Now, one thing I did forget to mention earlier is, like, I watched a behind the scenes thing about this movie, and they mentioned how it was such a big deal that this movie is like a love story to other movies. It's the first time that other movies have really been referred to as, like, you know with the fact that, like, Rosie O'Donnell's life, no, you want to fall in love in a movie is what you want to do. And the fact that movies play such a big part, that was something that was unique about this movie at the time. Yeah. I don't know where I was going with that. I mean,
that
happens, perfect.
That happens so often now.
Yeah, it feels like, you know, if you're referencing a movie, are you hoping that your movie's going to be better, or are you hoping it's going to be just as good as, like, you know?
Yeah,
better hope that other movie isn't the better movie that makes you want to go see it instead of this one. Yeah.
All right, let's see. R9 says 2.5 out of 5 stars. I can't say I had a fun time with Sleepless in Seattle. Post-watching, I was unsure how I felt about it. The whole setup and how the story is portrayed is weird. The fact that the two characters in what's supposed to be a rom-com don't even properly meet until the final act is an odd choice. Like, don't get me wrong, I can see it working, but here it didn't for me. Especially with one side giving stalker vibes, which adds to the weirdness. I also wasn't convinced by the two leads in both their performances and in their suitability. Obviously, the latter is hampered by the fact we barely see them together, so they cannot show any chemistry. Tom Hanks is the standout, but only just. Meg Ryan tries, though her character is just a bit mundane and is, in my opinion, better suited to Bill Pullman's Walter, even though the film attempts to show us the opposite. No one else on screen sticks out, though the credit to the youngster, Ross Malinger. It's a nay from me. Both Hanks and Ryan have thankfully done much better.
But she's quirky.
Yes.
You gotta have Meg Ryan if you want quirky, and so she's too quirky for Walter. That's the point. Not a better fit for Walter.
All right, this one's long. Elise Sieg is the movie 1.5 out of 5 stars. I really don't understand why this movie is so hyped up. All I've ever heard about this movie is how great it is and how much everyone loves it. Quite frankly, I'm a little confused and concerned for all these people's mental health. Do you think stalking someone is true love?
There is no love in this movie besides the love Tom Hanks has for his dead wife. All Meg Ryan feels is an obsession, and she takes this obsession way too far. Like, hello? You're really going to romanticize tracking down someone's address, hiring someone to take pictures of some guy, literally fly to where he lives to follow him around for an entire day, and just watch him hang out with his son all because you heard him talk on the radio? She didn't have feelings for Tom Hanks. She wanted someone to love her the way Tom Hanks loves his wife. He's never going to love her the way he loved his wife. So, girl, try to find this love somewhere else. I'm also a little concerned for Hanks's mental health. How did he not immediately want a restraining order when he recognized Ryan was the same girl that was staring at him in the middle of the street? Like, hello? Immediate red flag. Don't grab her hand and pretend like it was destiny to meet her. Literally call the police. This chick is going to end up ruining your life and getting you killed. And your poor son, Jonah's messed up too. He's so worried about replacing his mother, he can't even make a single smart decision. Everyone in this movie is psychologically unwell. Even Ryan's best friend. Like, how does she just think that it is okay to let Ryan go around an entire city and stalk a guy she's never met once? Red flag! This movie is for psychopaths and psychopaths only. It is portraying stalking as a symbol of love and affection, and quite frankly, that should not be okay. I am not sure if they ban movies, but this one deserves to be banned. It is promoting a horrible message. People cannot think this is okay. I am horrified.
Wow.
Maybe we should just go out on that one.
Go out on that one. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, some solid points there. Yeah, so Sleepless in Seattle. I mean, it's the OG. Or one of the OGs. I still had fun with it for what it is. It's a lot sillier than I remember it being. Like, I definitely see a lot of places where they could smooth out some of the rough edges. You know, like, I still have fun with it, but there are a few tweaks that could happen with it that would be like, oh, that could make it a bit more fun.
Mm-hmm.
But it still is what it is. I still like it. Watching it critically, it's much harder than watching it for fun, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah. So, yeah, Colin, your first experience with Sleepless in Seattle. What did you think?
Yeah, I think you put it well. I think that watching this movie as a popcorn flick, it's enjoyable, but watching it critically is tough. And I don't know. One of the things that bothers me about this movie is, like, I don't know, to go back to the Hallmark thing, but, like, any rom-com really is, like, the will they, won't they thing. That's what keeps a movie like this going. And it's just, like, normally that's the most natural part of the movie, but in this movie, it's weirdly the most forced part of it. Mm-hmm. Because even, like, every rom-com has this point where it's, like, you know, they're going to get together, they don't get together. They're going to get together, they don't get together. They're going to get together, then, like, some massive misunderstanding comes and drives a wedge, and then they spend the next movie, like, either, like, realizing the person that they went off with isn't right for them, or, you know, realizing that there was some sort of misunderstanding, and, you know, he was there even though she thought he wasn't there, and, you know, like, he actually didn't do the thing that she thought he did, blah, blah, or vice versa.
Yeah, I've seen and Twilight, you know, the most romantic of romantic comedies.
And in this movie, the way that they try to do what is normally, like, I call it the I'm crying in the window while the rain drips down scene, where it's somebody is looking through a window lamenting and, like, forlorn. Yeah. The way they try to do it in this movie is when she sees the sister or the friend hug. And then she moves back and she's done. She's done with it. No, blah, blah.
Yeah. She's going to settle for Walter.
It makes no sense. He did not know you. He knew nothing about you. He didn't know who you were. This is a one-way street. Like your feelings are hurt, but, like, he's completely oblivious. It just, like, that aspect of it just doesn't work. And
like almost like if even Jonah had pushed his agenda just a little bit harder, if we had gotten more tastes of who Annie is through these letters, that Jonah's receiving. Like, that might be a slightly different case, is, you know, if it's got him at least intrigued. But yeah, completely one-way street. Like, it's not even like he might have an inkling of who this is. Like a photograph that he might have gone, wait, is that... Oh, yeah, she almost got hit by a truck. She's getting in her car and leaving. You know, I don't know, you know?
Yeah. Like, I feel like they... And again, it's also weird, like, that Annie is off living her own life with her fiancé in a completely different city. Because I think, like, the other mechanism that could have... I love the whole theme of the magic, mm-hmm. but part of me, it's like, it's not real. And part of me wishes, like, this movie would have used Jonah to, like, create the magic. So, like, have it be more touches than just the New York thing. Like, but, like, if she lived in Seattle, it's like, oh, like, he could have set up her being at, like, some coffee shop or, like, them having more, like, meets. I think would have been an improvement somehow. But
it almost would have been more interesting if the letter that he had sent back didn't sound like a kid had written it.
Yeah.
Like, even if there had been more course. So it becomes this kid sending letters back and forth with Annie on his dad's behalf. He's basically, you know.
Yeah, because you have
courting this woman for his dad while his dad is off dating the wrong people.
Yeah, I would have loved that. And I would have loved that a lot better. And because you have the precedent that he already called the phone, the string.
The station, gave out his phone number, gave out his address. Yeah.
I also think, like, I don't know why they made the decision to really have Sam only, like, date one woman. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it would have been better to see him, like...
on a few dates.
Yeah, because it's kind of like, they both... end up looking kind of shitty. Like, Annie looks shitty because she just strung this, like, decent... They both just string decent people along. And then just, like, well past the point they knew that this... It wasn't gonna work out. And that's just, like, that's not what a good person is.
Oh, yeah. Like the woman he was dating, she was pretty annoying, but she was nice enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, no matter what. Like, she was trying.
So I think it would have been better to see him, like, kind of like we needed the montage of, like, failed dates and, like, you know, just a large to show that, like, you know, he's kind of been through the ringer a little bit.
Yeah.
And that he's also looking for the magic. Mm-hmm. Because he mentions the magic with his wife in the phone call, but, like, he really leaves it in a place where it's like, well, that could have only happened with her. And I think we needed to kind of see him realize, like, maybe there's a possibility the magic could come back before it does, not just like, oh, I, like, ran into you at the Empire State Building and now let's roll.
Oh, yeah, because they lay it on thick right from the beginning where... You know, oh, there's no way I'm going to find a love like that again. You know, she was special. She was magic. You know, the magic thing is the clip of him saying magic is replayed twice in this movie, you know, where when they're doing the the best of whatever. Yeah, you're right.
But it's still a feel good movie. At the end of the day, if you want to feel good, you'll feel good.
Yeah. It's just, it's missing something. And I think we've got a pitch for Hallmark. It's going to be a straight ripoff of Sleepless in Seattle, but it's going to stray enough that it's just another rom-com.
Christmas in Portland.
Christmas in Portland. Wide awake in Portland. Yeah.
Wide awake in Wyoming.
Well, there we go. That is Sleepless in Seattle, and that's our show for this week. Oh, boy. If you like that show, go give us a review. Give us 5 stars on whatever app you listen to your podcasts on, or, well, just tell somebody. Say there's this show out there, and I like it. Maybe you'd like it. Because word of mouth is really important for a podcast, finding an audience. Or if you want to be an executive producer, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne, become part of our Patreon family, and then you get a shout out just like Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast.
Be sure to check out our website, IUseToLikeThisOne.com, where you can find links to all of our podcast episodes and social media pages. Drop us a line at IUseToLikeThisOne@gmail.com. Let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter and the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Oh, boy. So we're right in the heart of the love month right now. So we're doing the most romantic of the Maggie-wary movies here. So moving on to our third movie. I mean, you've already mentioned it a few times today.
You got mail?
No. When Harry Met Sally.
Oh, When Harry Met Sally.
We're going for the granddaddy of them all.
Right.
One that I know you've seen. About. Yeah.
Oh yeah, Harry Met Sally. That's like the rom com of rom coms to me. This is this is a desert island movie for me.
Yeah. Okay.
If that right desert on. Island also has TV and the streaming service or Blu-ray player.
Well, yeah. You know, power. Yeah. If there's somewhere I could, you know, plug in a plug, you know, yeah, then absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Well, see, it's been a while since I've seen When Harry Met Sally, so I'm kind of excited to get back into this. I don't know. Maybe where he's bringing back some old movies that I haven't seen in a while. So.
Yeah, I love Meg Ryan. I know why all of America fell in love with her in the 90s. She's just adorable. Yeah.
Do you want an overview of You've Got Mail?
Well, I mean, are we going to save it for Maguire 2, The Return?
Maguire 2. Oh. Yeah, there is still, like, French Kiss and... Okay, never mind. Yeah,
Kate and Leopold.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
I'm sure she's got some other ones.
Yeah.
Did she ever do a movie with McConaughey? Did they cross paths?
I don't think so.
No. That's too bad.
All right. Maguire 2, Electric Boogaloo, coming next February.
After Dark. I don't know if she has any, like, weird...
There is one that I remember. Oh, God, what is it called? The Final Cut or something like that? Or... Oh, yeah, it's a thriller of hers. And I remember a blowjob scene in that one from America's Sweetheart, which was a very explicit one, if I remember correctly.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so, yeah. Yeah, to the point that I'm like, I didn't know that you could show that in a movie that didn't have an X rating. So, yeah. But anyway,
right.
I don't know. There is a thriller with her as well called DOA, which is actually another situation where Meg Ryan and Dennis Quaid are together in a movie. So we've got one of those coming at the end of this month. But for now, yeah, until next week when we watch When Harry Met Sally, I'm Sean Wells.
And I am podcasting in Edmonton. Damn it, no.
Okay.
I need a better I wanted like a good what could be my name? My radio name. You know what? I failed. I'm Colin Stewart. Bye everyone.
See you next time on I Used to Like This One. Out with the bang.
The date is June 25th, 1993, and we're watching Wow. I've been, like, stumbling all over my S's today.
Yeah.
Slee. Okay.
You had trouble with it in our last recording, too, in your
I know, man. Yeah. Getting a lisp or something.
It's this retainer of mine.
Yeah.
It just makes my ashes pretty terrible.
Okay.
All right.